Welcome to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community Radio Show. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG is committed to bringing awareness to organizations in our community. This show highlights local and surrounding area nonprofits to help listeners learn how they can have an impact in our community and is for educational purposes only. We believe that helping the community is always positive and recognize the importance of providing a voice. Every organization highlighted is a qualified 501c3. The opinions and missions expressed on MPC do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Welcome. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today for Milwaukee's philanthropic community, where we highlight people and organizations who are doing great things and making a big impact in our community. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations at Ellenbecker Investment Group. Raising awareness about environmental, social, and governance issues, or ESG, is a growing trend around the world with the goal of having an increasingly positive impact on society. The COVID pandemic has reinforced the importance of ESG issues, and there are stats that tell us that companies that perform well on ESG are less risky. They're better positioned for the long term and better prepared for uncertainty. My question is, how much do you know about the topic or about the impact that it can potentially have? Here to enlighten us a little bit about this issue is Dan Hartzig, Executive Director from WasteCap Resource Solutions, which is a nonprofit organization that helps sustain small business through waste reduction. Welcome to the show today, Dan.
Thank you so much, Jill. This is a really interesting and exciting opportunity for me.
Well, we're glad to have you here. So why don't you start out by telling us how you came to be the Executive Director at WasteCap?
Sure. So my personal journey to WasteCap was kind of long and winding, but kind of natural progression. I started off getting trained as an architect in college, and when I was working in that field, designing buildings and things like that, you get to see a lot of the waste and inefficiencies that go into most of our modern buildings, even with the best intentions. You know, it's like the designers know they're better ways to do things, and then, but you can't always necessarily do that on every project. So I saw a lot of that waste, and I started making noises about it in my firm. And so I said, okay, well, you're making noises about it. Why don't you work on the sustainable stuff?
You're like, whoops.
And go and learn all that. So it was fun. It was great. I got to start to, you know, do good every day, which really was nice. And so from there, in designing sustainable buildings, I moved to a property management firm where I got to also then see the operational side of buildings and operating them sustainably. And then from there, I started to grow that. I moved to Milwaukee, worked with a firm where I was doing that, you know, sustainable design, construction, and operations all around the globe. And while that was really fun and exciting, I was traveling a lot. I did occasionally get the question, you know, why did you fly all the way to Thailand to tell us how to make a sustainable building? But, you know, some things just have to be done face to face.
Right.
And, but I had young kids, and I got the opportunity to work locally here in Milwaukee and in mostly in Wisconsin for WasteCap. And so I jumped at that opportunity, took it. And so I thought actually my world was going to get a lot simpler because I was doing, you know, everything from energy efficiency, water efficiency, waste efficiency to healthy buildings, you know, low impact sites, and using alternative and more regenerative materials. And I was just going to focus on waste. And I'm like, oh, easy. I have to know about only one thing instead of a million things. And what I realized was that it was just the tip of an iceberg. What I thought I knew about the circular economy and running an efficient business and things like that was really just the tip of the iceberg.
So, okay. So why don't you tell us then more about the organization itself?
Sure. So WasteCap Resource Solutions is actually a 25-year-old nonprofit. Most people, when they hear that, they say, oh, you know, you've been around for 25 years. We've never heard of you. I'm sure there's probably a lot of nonprofits you've never heard of. But yeah, we've been around for 25 years. We help businesses and institutions, including government organizations, get to zero waste. Whether they're just starting that journey, you know, when they're looking, or they're you're looking to get a third-party certification for achieving zero waste. They've already gotten there. About half of what we do is the business operations and business efficiency side, and then the other half of what we do is construction and demolition waste management. We personally don't handle any material. We don't process it or move it around. We don't haul it. What we do is we advise, problem solve, research waste stream solutions.
Okay. So, all right, you said that you help organizations get to zero waste. Help us to understand what that means exactly.
Sure. So there's really no definition of zero waste, no standard definition of zero waste. Everyone has a slightly different take. Some of those include reduction efforts. Some exclude burning waste for energy. Some say 90% diversion is enough. Others say, you know, zero waste is zero waste. You got to be 100%, right? We use the USGBC's, the US Green Building Council's true zero waste zero definition. So that's an average of 90% or greater overall diversion from landfill, incineration, which is waste to energy, and the environment. You don't want to be just dumping stuff out back, right? And calling yourself zero waste. And it doesn't include liquid wastes or hazardous wastes. So basically just diverting materials is anything that you're doing to reduce, reuse, recycle, compost, or recover the productive recover materials for productive use in nature and the economy.
Okay, so
it's a mouthful.
tell us then how does an organization go about getting to zero waste then?
Well, I'll be honest, it's not easy. Every company is going to be a little bit different. It's definitely a journey, but there are three key areas that give a company, an institution, a government organization, a really good foundation, and that's looking at quantity, quality, and your contracts. First and foremost, you need to know how much waste you're actually producing and what types of waste. You'd be really surprised how often companies or people set out to recycle more or reduce their waste, but they don't realize how much of an impact those efforts are actually going to serve them, you know, serve for them. You also need to know the quality of your waste and your diversion streams. And that means getting to know, you know, what's actually going into it. That's the getting your hands dirty part sometimes, actually dumpster diving and taking a look at what you're throwing away. But, you know, if you have trash going into a recycling bin, you have to know that because that's not, you know, just because it goes in the recycling bin doesn't mean it's getting recycled, right? So just because you know how much you're recycling doesn't mean you know how much of that recycling is actually going to be recyclable. So knowing the material that's going into your waste streams is really important. And then lastly, reviewing your contracts, your policies, your internal processes to determine where you can make changes to realize your biggest improvements. Once you have those three, quantity, quality, and your contracts, that's when you can actually start figuring out where can you have the biggest impact, and you can run calculations on figuring out how much money it's going to save you, what the environmental savings is going to be, et cetera.
Okay, so this is all really great information, some of which I was not aware of. So I just thought that you recycle something and it gets recycled. Who knew that maybe it doesn't all go to the recycle place? But tell us then, what are those things that we should be recycling?
Interestingly enough, you know, 5-6 years ago, I would have answered that question. And now when people ask me, what can I recycle? I tell them to ask their hauler, because the reason is that from town to town, and even within a town, from processor to processor, the definition of what is and what isn't reusable, recyclable, and compostable varies often dramatically. Reuse, recycling, and composting are part of the circular economy. Each processor uses different equipment to purify it into a saleable product. They have different buyers for that product. And you really think about it, you know, the logistics and market prices affect what they can and cannot sell on a weekly basis. Those markets change constantly, and what a processor can sell can change just as fast. So get to know your friendly local recycling company. Ask them at least once a year, what can you recycle? And almost more importantly, what can't you recycle?
Mm, good advice. Great information. So, okay, so once an organization knows the processors in their area and they know what materials they can divert, how do they determine what to do next? Well, the answer to that is something that we talk a lot about every time on this show. So find out what that is after our short commercial break.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Jill Economo, and I'm talking in our next segment with Dan Hartzig from WasteCap Resources. So once an organization knows the processors in their area and they know what materials they can divert, how do they then know what to do next? And I mentioned before the break that it's something that we talk about as being a goal for this show, and that is impact. So Dan, tell us what impact means in your world and the importance of it.
So when we work with a company or building or any on a project, we try to locate the biggest paybacks, the quickest and most impactful, as you mentioned, impactful effort. And usually what that is by trying to locate the largest quantity of single type of material that's going into the waste or going into the recycling and apply pressure to change there. It's not usually the most glamorous or Instagram worthy approach, you know, like people want to, you know, reduce their plastic straw usage. That's great. It's not going to change anything from a total waste perspective, but, you know, cutting the amount of paper you use or something like that in office can really have a dramatic effect. So targeting the biggest material and using those approaches over the last 20 years, we've helped organizations keep over 1.1 million tons of trash out of the landfill. Now, what does 1.1 million tons look like?
Yeah, that's kind of hard to visualize, yeah. Right?
It's we searched around for a couple examples. We settled, since we're here in Wisconsin, on Lambeau Field. And most people, even if they haven't been to Lambeau Field, they've been to a football stadium. So 1.1 million tons would fill Lambeau Field from the field all the way to the top of the stadium twice over. Mm. Our activities to keep that material out of the landfill has added more than 50 days of operating life to each of Wisconsin's 50 landfills. It's actually like 54 right now, but meaning we haven't had to build new ones in someone else's backyard quite so quickly. But weight and volume are really just like one way to measure impact. It really doesn't tell the whole story because everything around you, all those materials came from somewhere. They were processed by someone and they were transported by someone to create those end product and get it to you. So reuse and recycling and composting have many other benefits. That 1.1 million tons we kept out of the landfill, got back into the circular economy, had higher and better uses. It saved 10,000 acres of habitat, kept over 780,000 tons of CO2 out of the atmosphere, and has provided 60 full-time jobs in the waste handling industry over the course of the last 17 years since we've been tracking. And it's also saved our clients more than $40 million. In operating fees.
Wow. I mean, when you say it that way, it's really easy to understand the impact on what you're doing. So the bottom line is that reducing, reusing, and recycling can save money.
Yes, absolutely. And the savings I mentioned, that $40 million savings, was just based on recycling. In general, recycling waste is less expensive than landfilling it, but savings shifting from trash to recycling is much less than if you never have to buy the material in the first place, if you reduce your usage. I like to use a shipping pallet loaded with reams of office paper as an example. It's about 1 cubic yard. And in Milwaukee in 2020, that cubic yard of paper would cost you $4 to throw away. It cost you only $3 to recycle in mixed recycling, so in with bottles and cans. it cost you $2 to recycle that paper if you had paper only stream. So in general, you know, if you kept it out of the trash and recycled it, you'd save about half on your waste bill. But if you never bought it in the first place, it would save you $1,500 on buying the paper and another $3,000 on ink and maintenance. So $4,500 savings versus a $4 cost. So yeah, reduction is really where we try to move the needle with the companies.
Okay. And so where do you find the funding then for all of these activities?
Most of our work is fee for service. So in a sense, we do operate actually a lot like a business, even though we are a nonprofit. We haven't found many grants to support our efforts to improve efficiency of Wisconsin businesses and institutions over the years. Every now and then we do get one or two, but we also don't have a professional development staff or board member. And for a very brief time, we did have one, someone whose sole purpose was to go and look for grants and things like that. And she was amazing. She actually found a whole bunch of stuff. And we were able to pull in a couple grants to help small businesses in Milwaukee. But for the most part, our funding is fee for service.
Okay. What about volunteers?
So along the same lines of, you know, us being kind of really niche, our work is really highly skilled, so we don't have volunteer opportunities so much. But we do partner with Revitalize Milwaukee, which is another great nonprofit.
Mm-hmm. Had them on the show.
Oh, cool.
Good organization, yeah.
Awesome. But so they do Block Build, which is really fun, just finished a couple weeks ago. And it's an engaging weekend where you renovate like 20 or 30 homes in one weekend with like 400 people. So we handle all the waste from that process. So we try to recycle as much as possible. And that's where, you know, we could use a few volunteers, but really where we could use assistance always is on our board. Our board is a great group of really diverse people, but you know, we can always use help with HR, grant writing, sales, strategic planning, and board management.
Okay. Well, where are some areas where you would like to do more?
So I think the biggest thing that we get asked really is like, who do you work with and who do you do this with? And we end up primarily working with really big companies and really big organizations like Lands' End, Kohler, the UW campuses, et cetera, because the payback rates are so fast. You know, I mentioned ROIs, return on investments, when you do waste management and looking at what you're buying and throwing away. The payback rates are so fast, minutes to hours for the amount of that a company would pay us that they can recoup. And so, but the problem is with smaller companies, that payback is much longer, like in months to years. And so smaller companies usually can't afford to take a look at that. But we recognize that small companies today are the large companies of tomorrow. And many of the success stories we have, the companies that are getting to zero waste today, are companies that had a sense of environmental justice and ESG at the start. So we're always on the lookout for grant opportunities to support efficiency improvements in small businesses and startups. And when they become available, we're able to provide our services for free or low cost to those and kind of build up a grassroots level of understanding of just business efficiency and sustainability in Wisconsin. So, you know, we could always use more foundations looking to support other companies. And as a result, the community and the world in that way.
Okay. So if somebody's listening and they want to get involved in some way or just get more information about the resources that you offer, what's the best way for people to get a hold of you?
You can go to wastecap.org. That's wastecap.org, O-R-G. And that's our website, obviously. It's got a lot of our contact information there. You can email us at projects@wastecap.org as well. And you'll find all sorts of interesting stuff on our website, from our impact statements to resources that we have available for the community, such as our Wisconsin Recycling platform, where you can type in your address and the material you're looking for and to try to divert, and you can find out who's recycling or reusing or composting that material in the area.
Wonderful. That's a great resource. So one more time, the website address for people just so they can remember.
Wastecap.org. So WASTECAP.org.
Okay. Dan Hartzig with Wastecap Resource Solutions. Thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for helping us learn and understand more about ESG. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jill.
You're welcome. Well, our next guest is from an organization that answered Dan's call to step up and out into the community to provide much needed education and support around the topic of ESG. We'll learn more about them after our commercial break. We'll be right back.
Thanks for tuning in. This is EIG, Milwaukee's philanthropic community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's philanthropic community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations. And my next guest today is someone who answered Dan's call to step up and out and provide that much needed education and support to the community around the topic of ESG. Welcome to the show today, Stephanie Krubsack, founder of PureVant Living and senior project manager at Wastecap Resource Solutions. Welcome to the show today, Stephanie.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are welcome. Why don't you share with us how you got started in this area of sustainability?
Well, it actually started at a really young age. So my parents took 20 acres of farmland and put it into a reforestation program called the CRP program. So basically, we planted by hand a whole field of trees, and today it's now a large forest, and you have to maintain that over time. So started that at a really young age, grew up with an organic garden. So that would be the first part of sustainability, I would say. And then secondly, when I was at UW-Madison, I was part of a LEED green building project for a new union on campus. So that was back in 2006, and basically working with the design team to make sure that repurposed materials were in this space, working with students, looking at the functionality of what they wanted in this space. And that building, the new Union South, was built to a silver LEED standard.
Interesting background. Yeah. Wow. And so how did PureVant Living come about? And how did you get the name?
Yeah, I made up the name actually as like pure plant-based initially. So yeah, PureVant is a made-up word. And I worked in manufacturing for over 10 years and in the tech space for a bit as well. And I started freelancing on the side back in 2014 in more the marketing capacity. And in 2019, I launched my company full-time. And when I set everything up, my LLC, I basically set it up sustainably from day one. So looking at what my carbon emissions were, even as a primarily services business, there are ways to offset your carbon emissions. Tracking everything, reporting on it, adding in community work, more the S, the social piece of ESG, which we'll get into a bit later. So really just starting everything up from day one with that sustainability structure in mind.
And so between the breaks, Dan was telling me that sustainability is really only one piece of this ESG idea. So you're focusing on that sustainability piece, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so tell us then about specifically about the consulting part of PureVant Living.
Yeah, so it's really two capacities. So if you are a business getting started in this space, or even a services or a tech company, you can still operate this way because you do have a footprint, even if you maybe have a small facility or a remote working environment. You still have emissions from all of your operations. You have energy usage, you have travel to and from clients, things like that. So basically helping a company look at how can we start that way from day one with that structure, or working with a larger manufacturer and their existing green team to help with employee education and buy-in and special initiatives such as like waste reduction and things like that to really improve their current sustainability efforts.
And so you do organizations reach out to you, or do you do like classes or seminars to kind of raise awareness around this whole thing?
Yeah, it's a lot of organic reach, so referrals and working with companies in different capacities, and having a background in manufacturing as well, too, really helps.
Okay. And so you've got some things going on in the media space also. So tell us about that. Tell us about the media side of your business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a magazine and podcast, both called Person and Planet. So it's really all about sharing your sustainability success stories. So all the positive things that are being done within that space. So it could be your product, your service, even sustainable artists and artwork are featured in that. So really showcasing what developments that you're creating from operating sustainably.
So tell us more how you get to these resources, or how do you learn about the media side?
Yeah, so Person and Planet Podcast is on all major platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and several others. And Person and Planet Magazine is actually available internationally via Amazon Print on Demand for now. I would like to find a sustainable printer eventually as it grows. And it's also available in digital format, too.
Okay, so you've got some great things going on that side of the business as well. You're a busy lady, I imagine.
Very.
So I think we all understand that organizations could increase their profits by incorporating these practices into their business. The question that I have is, what are we talking about here? Like, what kind of difference can it make? Well, we're going to talk about that after we take a quick commercial break, so stay tuned. And we'll be right back.
You're listening to EIG, Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, with your host, Jill Economo, on News Talk 1130 WISN.
Welcome back to Milwaukee's Philanthropic Community, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. I'm your host, Jill Economo, Director of Community Relations. And I'm talking again in our last segment with Stephanie Krubsack, founder of PureVant Living. She's also a senior project manager at WasteCap Resource Solutions. So before the break, I said the question that I have is, what kind of difference can organizations expect in terms of profits by incorporating these practices into their business?
There's actually a study by Moore Global that suggests that businesses that have ESG practices in place see a 9.1% increase in profitability over a 3-year span. So that is quite significant. And looking at, you know, ESG as a whole, so what does that actually mean? So like the three pillars, environmental, social, and governance. And we talked a little bit earlier, or a lot of it, I should say, with WasteCap, the environmental side. So waste reduction initiatives, how are you operating by saving resources and funds as well? And the social piece would be, so what does your team environment look like? Do you have wellness programs in place? Do you work with supply chain that have fair labor practices and wages? So things like that. And the governance side, do you have a diverse team or board? So there's really those three different pillars that encompass all of it. And when you practice or implement those principles into your business, you're really reducing or eliminating risk. Because if you have, let's say, a supplier in your supply chain that maybe has some questionable or non-transparent practices, that would come down and trickle into your business. So if you are operating by all of these principles and, you know, highlighting what they do, you really eliminate that risk for your company as well.
Okay. So I think to help the audience understand a little bit more about ESG as a whole, can you share some stats that support what you were just talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in addition to showing that you have a greater profitability or return on revenue when you operate this way, there was another study done between 2019 and 2022. So companies that reported on their commitment to ESG, so they had a revenue increase of 9.7%, where companies that did not report on ESG had a return of 4.5%. So almost doubled, or more than doubled, actually. So that's really interesting to show that when you have these principles in place, you do have an opportunity for more financial viability for your business. Another 30-year study, which is very interesting about investments, so sustainable investments. So it was with a local firm here in Milwaukee, River Water Partners, had an article in my magazine where they looked at the KLD 400 social index, and that generated a return of 9.95% versus the S&P 500 index return was 9.61. So basically with this study, they took $10,000 and put it in each of the separate types of funds. And over a 30-year period, the returns were greater for the sustainable funds. So that's another representation that it is a great long-term goal to operate that way.
That's good for us to know as an investment firm.
Yeah, so some other interesting facts, too. So another study by PDI Technologies, Greenprint, found that 66% of Americans are willing to pay more for eco-friendly products or services. So that's super interesting. Also looking at other studies that say that sustainable products that are marketed as such grow 2.7 times faster than non-sustainable products, and that basically, sustainability-focused S&P 500 companies have a 18% higher return on investments. So, again, some great stats to show that, especially with long-term goals and vision, that operating sustainability really does have positive impacts.
And I saw something, too, that said 55% of consumers are willing to pay more for eco-friendly brands, which I find that interesting. I mean, I maybe think people will be paying more attention to that when they're when they're shopping. So we're now educated on why this is important based on the stats that you shared. Can you elaborate and walk us through what it would be like as a business owner?
Yeah, so one fact I'd like to add in quickly about what we just discussed as well. So it's not just that you know, customers are willing to pay more for your product or service because you operate that way. You're also looking at what is your visibility to all your stakeholders, to potential employees as well, too. So not just the customer side, but that you are very transparent about your practices, your commitment to sustainability or the environment. You're going to attract a lot more applicants as well. So that is another good point I'd like to make for that. And so as a company, if you are looking at, you know, how do I get started in this space, it can be challenging. It can be overwhelming knowing where to start and what to work with. That's why working with WasteCap and strategic partners, that they do waste very well. Reduction and diversion, that's their specialty. So working with organizations that can do X, Y, and Z very well. Also depending on your company size. So if you're a small company, I have templates that help you get started and track everything. If you're a large manufacturer with a very complicated supply chain, you're going to want to use more extensive software to track all of that for you. Your carbon emissions, things like that. If you're an international company, there's the CBAM that came out where you have to report on carbon emissions from the creation of your product. So if you want to sell internationally, there's a lot of pushback now. It's not completely, there's nothing that will reprimand you currently for not reporting on this, but it will come in effect very soon. But some companies are already requiring it that, hey, if we are purchasing from you, we need to see that report on emissions. So it is coming down the pipeline. So it's good to start to prepare yourself as a company for that. And if you are on the other side of things, new company and startup phase, just looking at how you can set up things from day one, that you are very strategic about your supply chain, that you're making sure that they operate very sustainably, they're transparent about their practices, their workforce, how they pay their employees, versus if you are a existing manufacturer and you have, you know, tight margins to work with, it's more difficult to completely switch your supply chain because you've been operating that way for many, many years. You know what works. But as a bigger company, you have more clout that you can now go to your supplier and say, okay, you right now ship the items in plastic wrap or in cardboard boxes. Can you instead send it to us in a plastic reusable tote? So things like that you can start to ask or demand of your supply chain, because whatever they send their raw material or product to you and it then goes into your production, you are responsible for that trash that comes along with it. And that affects your bottom line, the trash that you have to pay to be taken away. Unless working with WasteCap, they can help you say, okay, so they can't send it to you in a plastic tote, but instead a cardboard box. we know how we can divert that. Or we have pallets. We know a place we can divert that wood for you, that another company would purchase that from you instead of sending it to landfill that you have to pay for. So that would be a really good way to see some immediate results, what Dan had spoke to previously. And again, just looking at your packaging too for your product, so not just your supply chain, but your end product. So could you perhaps have a compostable item, or again, a reusable packaging or cardboard or renewable type of packaging instead of plastic or single-use plastic? Even your inks, soy-based versus petroleum-based inks, are compostable. So that would be another area. And then looking at all of your emissions. And the biggest takeaway I would say is that just start tracking from day one. So you have to start somewhere. And in relation to what Dan mentioned about the zero waste certification through GBCI, where you divert 90% or more waste from landfill, you have to have at least 1 year of data before you can apply. So even if your long-term goal is or is not to get a certification, just start tracking today so you have that data, you have a baseline, and then in 2025 you can say, okay, this is what we have for data, so from the year prior, and now this year we know what we're working with and where we improve or what areas we need to focus more on. Also, just having a roadmap, an integration plan, and having realistic goals. I know a lot of companies are claiming carbon neutral or carbon negative by 2030. That's, you know, less than 6 years away. So we're getting close to that. So that's maybe not realistic, especially for a manufacturer. So just really being transparent and realistic about your goals. And I like to call it creating a sustainability charter. So there's a lot of greenwashing that's going around today, and companies sometimes are fearful of saying anything good they're doing in sustainability because of trying or not getting that, I guess, definition that they're claiming too much. But if you have a charter, it's more of a solidified action plan. It's not saying, oh, we're natural, we're doing this, we want to do this. It's more of saying, okay, we know we can accomplish this within the next 10 years or the next 5 years. So looking at that more long-term vision and sharing your regular updates. Let's say your supply chain, I know we talked about like waste and things, like let's say plastic straws. We want to switch to compostable straws. So that's, we're actively seeking other suppliers. So that would be a communication you could use to talk about, okay, so we're actively finding a replacement to solve this problem, that you're communicating that to all of your stakeholders, in your newsletters, to your employees, on your social media platforms. So that would be the second part too, that you're not just operating sustainably or making these changes, but then people actually know that you're doing them or that you're working on them. And I think that's a piece that a lot of companies forget, is the whole marketing piece, the communication side.
I was going to ask about that because I'm thinking, gosh, if an organization made it known that they were focusing on this or that it was an important goal of theirs perhaps, then other organizations might be more inclined to do the same, mm-hmm. right? So how would a company go about marketing their sustainability efforts? Give us some ideas.
Yeah, so one thing I help clients with right now is even creating pitch decks to share with their current suppliers or customers and their internal team. So saying, okay, these are our sustainability, our ESG goals, and we want to do X, Y, and Z by this year. And then working with your supply chain, saying that, okay, so we would like you to be more conscious of what you're shipping your materials in by X date, or we would like this alternative. So just really having that transparency that everybody knows, or that you're all on the same page. So creating basic presentations for your customers, your supply chain, and then your internal team too, so they know what's going on, or even starting a green team within your company too, so you have more buy-in. So your internal internal employees can take some initiative too and share their ideas and thoughts about how you can collectively work on these goals together. I also like to suggest aligning with organizations that help you offset your mission. So I know Tradewater is one really great organization. They remove methane and very polluting materials, even more than carbon, from the atmosphere, from leakage and things like that. So that's a really great organization. Or 1% for the Planet, Carbon Fund, those are all organizations that actively pursue projects such as like solar farms or planting trees, things like that, to help you offset your carbon if that's one one avenue you'd like to go down, or membership opportunities for local organizations that have business networks or training within sustainability. And then just to create an impact and carbon footprint report too. So you're taking these great steps, you're communicating on social platforms, and also having that annual report where you pull all of that data together that you have easily accessible on your website in your communications that anybody can find, whether that's a potential customer, your supply chain, a potential employee. And then again, just representing those three pillars of ESG and what you're doing in each of those areas. Another area too is the SDGs, or Sustainable Development Goals. There's 17 goals and they cover a variety of areas. And you can pick several that you and your company align with that you want to focus on. And that may change from year to year. So for myself, I generally focus on number 4, quality education, and 14, life below water. So regularly hosting paddle cleanups, things like that, education for small businesses getting started in sustainability. So those would be two that I would select for the year. And that is a good way to align with those development goals and showcase what you're doing as a company.
Okay. And you as a nonprofit, the Pure Vaunt Living, you collaborate with WasteCap on a number of different projects, I would imagine.
I'm actually a for-profit company, but I have a 2% give back model and a lot of community work, but a for-profit company, just to clarify. So with WasteCap and working with them to, in the capacity of a project manager, getting to actually work on these waste audits. So working with organizations and going on site, digging through the trash, looking at where there are opportunities to maybe buy less of something that's being thrown away, or what can we divert that another supplier would purchase from you instead of sending to landfill. So that's been a really good way to have the certification, actually do these waste audits, and then being able to communicate that after and showcase how all that works. So really just having a good picture of all those moving pieces.
Okay, so again, we never have enough time to go through everything. There's so much good information here, but we're just planting that mustard seed so you listeners can get a little bit of information here and at least be able to talk about it, do something about it. If somebody listening wants to get a hold of you, Stephanie, what's the best way for them to do that?
So you could definitely email me at sk@purevauntliving.com. Or purevauntliving.com is my website as well, and it would be the same for all social platforms.
Okay, super. Well, thank you. Thank you, Stephanie Krubsack, founder of Pure Vaunt Living and senior project manager at WasteCap Resource Solutions. And thank you to Dan from WasteCap Resource Solutions. I appreciate you both sharing your knowledge and your expertise in the area of ESG, an important topic that both organizations and individuals can become more aware of and participate in. So thank you to both of you for being my guests today.
Thank you for having
me.
Thank you.
You're welcome. If you'd like further information about what we talked about today, you can reach out directly to Dan or Stephanie at the contact information they shared. And if you know of a great organization doing great work in our community that you think should be on the show, or if there's a topic of discussion that you'd like to learn more about, you can just email me at jill@ellenbecker.com. Tune in next Sunday morning at 10 to Milwaukee's philanthropic community to learn more about the ways people and organizations are contributing to making our community a safe and healthy place to live and work. You can tune in to News Talk 1130 on your radio, your computer, or your cell phone. I encourage you to visit our website at ellenbecker.com to listen to previously aired shows or listen on demand. So, as I said before, if there's an important topic being talked about in the news or on various social platforms out there that you know little or nothing about, take the time to learn about it. Read about the topic. Listen to interviews like the one that you heard about today to learn more about the particular topic. And that way you can make a difference by simply sharing what you learned with others. Maybe the people that you share it with knew nothing about it either, and now you're both informed. And once you're informed, you can then make some informed decisions on what you might want to do that can make a difference in your home, your business, or in our community. Our guests today have shared many ways that you can make a difference in the area of ESG. I'm sure they would agree that anything you do would be helpful and appreciated. So take time to determine how you can be a blessing and give a blessing. I'm confident that it will come back to you tenfold. Thanks for listening today, and have a great day.